Hello, this is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today's discussion is about the third episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, streaming on Disney+. This podcast contains spoilers for the show, and any films or content that Marvel Studios has released by the time the episode aired on April 2nd, 2021. If you're worried about speculation altering your experience of other Marvel movies, shows, or comics that you haven't gotten to yet, well, this podcast might have to wait for a little bit. You've been warned. Want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard? Well, send us some email. This is thewayphase4@gmail.com. Interact with us on Twitter, @thewayphase4, or visit facebook.com/thewayphase4 and leave comments. And leave likes wherever you can, please. Also, it's more fun when you guys join in the discussion. Once again, a week with no feedback. The episode titled Power Broker said to be about 50 minutes long, but from the opening shot to credits, it's just about a little over 44 minutes of showtime. The description in Disney Plus says Sam and Bucky go to a criminal safe haven to find information about the Super Soldier Serum. Where did we leave off? Well, we get to know a little bit more about John Walker, the man taking up the shield for the U.S. government as the new Captain America, and we know he's far from the ideal that Steve Rogers embodied. We see the Falcon and the Winter Soldier going on mission and fail, but sometimes failure leads to breakthroughs. If there is one thing Bucky and Sam can bond over, it's their dislike of Walker. We're introduced to the Power Broker, or at least told that he exists. It's the guy that seems to be behind the serum that the Flag Smashers have taken, both for themselves and perhaps to create an army for one world, one people. Back home in the States, Sam Wilson meets Isaiah Bradley, a 50s-era version of Captain America that no one has heard of, probably because of the color of his skin. Why has he been kept secret for so long? Perhaps an old adversary of Bucky's knows. So Bucky and Sam are off to find Helmut Zemo.
We're gonna go see Zemo.
Don't give him a second to delete, shred, or breathe.
All right, this week's show. The Disney Plus Snap splash screen is followed by a previously on segment, and then the Marvel Studios title sequence. Then, an in-universe commercial follows. Definitely not the kind we would see on WandaVision in the middle of the episodes. It's a slick promotional ad for the GRC, or Global Repatriation Council. It came off kind of like a pharmaceutical ad. The tagline at the end is reset, restore, rebuild, which is what the Flag Smashers are against, but the rest of the world really needs. I think Marvel's smart to touch on the subject. I'm just not sure if the commercial landed with me. It's kind of like a bad trope in movies when we end up seeing buildings get leveled, people die, and then there are no repercussions. Nothing is mentioned about it ever again. So half the Earth disappeared for 5 years, and to think it wouldn't be an all-consuming effort by the entire world to adjust when people come back is almost more of a leap to me than believing Norse gods were aliens, a billionaire could build a suit of armor that can fly, or man can turn into giant gray-green monsters when they get angry. So if anything, the commercial starts us off with a tone.
Reset. Restore. Rebuild.
That tone immediately shifts when John Walker appears in the next scene. We're starting to see that there's a difference between Colonel Phillips wanting Hodge and Erskine wanting Rogers in Captain America the First Avenger, right? The serum amplifies what's inside the man. So woe to everyone if Walker ends up getting some. Unless he lied and he already does have the super strength, and that's why he's kind of a jerk. Walker and Hoskins there in Munich trying to track down the Flag Smashers. Somehow they found the man that hid her and her group last episode. They harass him, and he won't give them up. Then he calls the Americans brutes, bullies, which they kind of are. And the man spits in Walker's face, and Walker loses his cool.
Do you know who I am?
Yes, I do, and I don't care.
Hoskins tries explaining to Walker outside what he should already know. And while it's likely just exposition for us, the audience, what it does when it comes from the sidekick is tell us that Walker is unworthy. His temper seems to be an issue. It's definitely clouding his judgment, right? Hoskins explains how Carly Morgenthau seems to be inspiring loyalty, which is not what Walker is doing. Remember, the internet cafe owner said she was like Robin Hood. Walker, frustrated that their leads from Langley and the CIA are dried up, says it's time to shift gears.
So we bet on someone who's got a better hand.
I'm wondering if it's a pun. Since, you know, Bucky literally has a better hand, a vibranium one. We see Bucky and Sam in a German prison walking down a hall to meet Zemo. Instead of them going in together, Bucky wants to go alone. He was obsessed with Hydra, he says. Bucky says about Zemo. Sam is an Avenger, so, you know, he wouldn't do too well in the interrogation. But I think there's another motive. Bucky is led through all the layers of security. Apparently there's no audio inside the cell. I'll explain why that's odd to me later. Zemo sees Bucky and immediately starts the activation protocol for the Winter Soldier, which is really cool. I was wondering about it, and I'm glad they addressed it. He starts going into the words right away. I think it would have been cooler for him to pepper in the words in a conversational style, and then suddenly we realize, like, when he starts to say these weird off-the-wall things, we start to hear the words, and then maybe they could have done an audio thing with it so that we could tell that this is what was happening. But, you know, it was like it could have been a carefully rehearsed conversation maybe that he had in his mind should this exact situation ever present itself. But saying the words outright like he did didn't really seem like the sort of thing that would get very far anyways. But he says, you know, it doesn't work on me. At any rate, Bucky's cured of the brainwashing. So Suri did it during his time in Wakanda. I don't know how, but it's over. Zemo actually apologizes to Bucky for using him, saying it was never personal, and then he was an ends to a means. Bucky lets him know there is more super soldier serum, and Zemo just deduces that Hydra is suspected, and if he came to the prison, that he is desperate, and it's all pretty much spot on. But he says he knows where to begin the search. Then we cut to Sam and Bucky leaving the prison, or at least entering some kind of garage, maybe the prison garage, without Zemo, and apparently without a lead. Sam's not happy with the plan that Bucky and Zemo have hatched.
Can I walk you through a hypothetical?
We see it happen. Zemo breaks out of prison. Sam's describing all the things wrong with such an idea. Bucky simply believes that Zemo has a code and hates super soldiers more than Avengers. And it seems like it would have been a scene that's setting up a episode-long prison break.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything.
We start to see it right in front of us while Bucky's talking about it. It's interesting. It's shorthand, I guess. Script shorthand. Fight breaks out. Guards respond. Zemo's prison cell opens. Grabs and seduces a guard. Steals his clothes. Makes his way out by hitting a fire alarm. Leaves in the confusion. And then he just shows up in the garage. And now, this is where I talk about the audio feed. So they have a video feed of him in his cell, but no audio. I guess you can have a video feed, but no, you know, but they need privacy, no audio. If you're supposed to be one of the world's most dangerous criminals, I'm not sure that the audio, you know, having a video feed and not audio of what's going on in there makes much sense, but okay. Sam's not pleased that Zemo's out. Bucky points out Sam's stuck his neck out once before for Bucky and was put in prison for it. And that seems to work for Sam. He tells Zemo, you better behave.
If we do this, you don't make a move without our permission.
There.
They all visit Zemo's garage. He's got amazing cars in there. And Zemo has stuff stashed in the back seat of the cars. There's like a purple mask, one of the things from the comic books that's on the seats. He packs his bags. They head to his private plane. He explains to Sam that he's rich because he was a baron, at least before Sokovia fell, you know, literally falls from the sky, Sokovia in, you know, Age of Ultron. His butler, Esnik, is there to greet them. He's a really old guy. He greets them. Apparently the fridge is out in the galley. Zemo tells him in Sokovian to give them any food that doesn't pass the smell test. And I guess Zemo is drinking warm champagne, and Zemo is just a jerk. He taunts Sam about having been in prison. Somehow he swiped Bucky's notebook that was, we find out, his notebook that he's been writing things in was indeed Steve Rogers' notebook. Sam recognizes it, asks if he's gone through it, pointing out the trouble man Marvin Gaye mentioned that he had in Winter Soldier.
I told him about trouble man. He wrote in that book. Did you hear it? What'd you think?
Zemo seconds that recommendation, while Bucky says basically he's a fan of big band music, which no wonder he told Yuri Nakajima he finds dating difficult in the first episode. Bucky threatens Zemo, though, never touch his stuff again. Zemo then explains why he dislikes the idea of the Superman, and I'm not talking about the DC character. I'm talking about what the Germans, you know, in World War II and Johann Schmidt and Hydra wanted. They wanted super soldiers, you know, supermen. He says holding up people like Steve Rogers as idols is always dangerous, and that's not entirely untrue, because when there are flaws, you're really stuck with whatever flaw that might be, and it might be a bad one, and you can only hope that it's a good one.
From there, cities fly. Innocent people die. Movements are formed. Wars are fought.
Zemo's got a plan, though. They're going to go to Madripoor, and it sounds like they will all have to do some acting. We jump to the Super Serum Flag Smashers in the next scene, and it's a short one. And it really seems like there's something missing from the scene. We see people that seem to be enjoying themselves in Riga, Latvia, but they're at a hospital, apparently. Carly goes upstairs, I guess, and visits who we hear is Mama Donya. And maybe they'll explain much more about her later, but we learned in this episode she was important to the people who became the Flag Smashers, and she was, unsurprisingly, I guess, with her moniker, a mother figure. She's apparently dying of tuberculosis, but maybe that's not what Marvel originally had planned, because it seems like this scene is kind of cut and pasted and put together weird, and it's dubbed over with VO. Just a really weird scene. Now, since the show was shot 2 years ago, maybe there was something about a virus, and they just needed to change things up, because TB seems a little bit better than something that sounds like coronavirus. Remember, the crates had vaccine on it, and they don't seem to be, you know, there's not that many doses of super serum out there in the wind. At any rate, Carly tells Mama Donya she's sorry. The team visits Madripoor, and Zemo seems to have set up transportation and clothing for Falcon. He's pretending to be the Smiling Tiger, which is a character from the comics, I guess, and he's apparently a suave underworld character here in the Marvel Studios universe that looks exactly like Sam. Madripoor's got two parts, Hightown, Lowtown. Lowtown's where they're going to head, and that's the more dangerous part. They see the Princess Bar, which I think has something to do with Wolverine, from what I understand in the comics. But they enter the Brass Monkey Bar, and Zemo makes a point to pretend to activate Bucky as the Winter Soldier when they're going in, so that he says the line, like,
Zini Soldat.
I guess in Russian he says it so that people hear it. And there's a line about Bucky, like, I guess you got a haircut. There's some movement in the bar, and a hooded figure leaves when the three approach the bartender for some drinks and information on the person that they're trying to get to, Selby. Sam has to down a gross-looking snake gut drink, and Zemo has Bucky attack some of the people that are asking questions and, you know, getting close to them. And it's a ruse, and it works. The bartender says they can go see Selby.
The breadcrumbs you're going to have for free. Well, the bakery's going to cost you, Baron.
There's a weird slow-motion scene that comes next as they walk into Selby's lair. It just seems out of place. She gets an offer from Zemo for the Winter Soldier, for Bucky, and his codes for activation in exchange for information. And since she's a low-level, what Zemo says, she's a low-level person, and they're going to climb the ladder, she actually ends up giving up the name Wilfred Nagel as the one creating the super serum in Madripoor. She says they won't be able to find him, but, the name really was kind of the information, I think. They've got connections. A tense moment comes up with Sam's phone ringing, and the look everyone gives him, I think, alerts Selby, and she says, no, you're going to take that call right now and take it on speakerphone. He tries to play act a convincing half conversation, but it's Sarah, and his sister's kids end up bringing up Cheerios, or like she brings up Cheerios, and then she drops his real name, Sam, and Selby's like, kill him. But she gets sniped from a nearby rooftop. Zemo suggests they head out quickly, but without weapons, to hopefully not draw attention. But like a scene out of John Wick, the word gets out almost immediately. There's a bounty on the heads of the killers of Selby. You know, they each took out, you know, Bucky took out one of the guards, Sam took out one of the guards, and, you know, Zemo goes through the situation. He says, let's get out of here. They retreat through Lowtown, and they're ambushed. But once again, they're saved by Sharon Carter.
I stole Steve's shield, remember? I also took the wings for your ass so that you could save his ass from his ass.
Sharon has a place in Hightown, it turns out. She's been on the run for quite some time. She decided that if she's got to pretend to be a smuggler and a stolen art dealer, she might as well actually do it. I don't know how much of a gray area she's dealing in, but I guess you can make the case that this was already going on, and I guess it's good to have an informed eye on it. But what has she done, you know? I mean, is she only hurting bad guys, or is she robbing from innocence as well and hurting innocent people? I mean, it seems like if you get caught up in that kind of world, you have to do some dirty things. She and Bucky and Sam end up catching up a little bit. And she says she can find Nagel. She hosts a party. And then at some point she approaches them at night and she says,
"Hey, guys, I found him.
Here we go."
Just like that, they're off in the early morning to the Madripoor shipyards, full of shipping containers. Carter hands out earpieces, tells them, "Be quick." She shows them where Nagel's supposed to be. The lab entrance is disguised inside an empty-looking shipping container. It's high-tech, but apparently there's no security system, unless that's what the goons are for. They're the low-tech security system. Sam and Bucky and Zemo head inside. They confront Nagel. He seems to recognize that Zemo wants anything to do with the super soldiers destroyed, because he feels like Zemo is the only one that Nagel is kind of worried about. But he lays everything out. He was actually working for the CIA before the blip, got dusted when he came back. The power broker was very happy to help him continue his work. It seems that he's been using blood samples from an American test subject, probably Isaiah. Maybe it's someone else, but probably Isaiah. He says he's perfected the serum and had the most success since Erskine. And honestly, he's kind of right. He says he made 20 doses. And Carly stole them all. But then he says she called him later for help with Donya Madani, who I think we can assume is Mama Donya. Now, why would she steal from Nagel and then ask him for help? It didn't seem like she was trying to use leverage. It seemed like she was trying to steal vaccines. At any rate, Nagel seems to be the real deal of a scientist. You know, Bruce Banner needed gamma radiation for his trials. The Red Skull presumably copied Erskine's work on Bucky. Steve got bulked up when he took the serum and got baked in Howard Stark's Vita-Ray microwave-looking container in First Avengers. Meanwhile, the Flag Smashers are just strong. They're not roided up. They're not showing clear side effects like Blonsky as the Abomination. He has a super effective super serum, but Carly stole it. All 20 samples he created, or at least he says all. Sharon is trying to get them to hurry. She's a one-woman army outside handling all the attackers, but she makes her way into the lab and says, "You know, we got to get moving right now." And as soon as they're distracted by her entrance, Zemo takes the opportunity to use a gun that he found taped under a desk, and he executes Nagel. His mission has always been to eliminate super soldiers, and this was his shot. Unfortunately, they lost a bargaining chip and more information, but it doesn't really matter. They also get rocketed by one of the henchmen, and the lab starts to burn, and now that Nagel is gone, his work might be also. But if these were the power broker's men, what are they doing rocketing the lab? You know, they didn't know what was going inside, or did they? Maybe they did. Maybe there was a security system. Maybe this was a failsafe. I don't know. The three head outside. They start shooting it up. Meanwhile, Zemo ends up on top of the containers. He dons his mask, causes an explosion, hops down, starts fighting ferociously. It's just a very weird scene. I don't know how Sharon really found the guy. When they're escaping the shipyard in a car Zemo just randomly finds, Sharon goes to her waiting car and driver and tells her they've got a problem. A few problems, or a couple problems, she says. So it kind of feels like she's either the power broker working for him, or, I mean, I don't know. I still think the power broker could be Thunderbolt Ross, working off the grid in order to create the team that he can control instead of Nick Fury, but I'm just not really sure. The one funny thing that happens in the scene is when they're leaving, Bucky finally gets to refuse Sam, like Sam did to Bucky in the Civil War about the moving the seats.
"You're not going to move your seat up, are you?"
"No."
The next two scenes contrast each other pretty well. We see Carly and one of her fellow Flag Smashers, Dovich, discuss the situation they are in, and it feels like there's a reason to sympathize with them, their plight. They're outside a GRC supply depot in Lithuania. Carly maybe could have been a school teacher. She says Dovich, though, mentions the military and that he was in security in Madripoor, but they both seem like just two kids in over their heads at this point, at least until they describe taking the serum. And then they felt like they had power, and Carly says the world should have been Mama Danya's, so perhaps Mama Danya was the charismatic leader of these displaced teenagers that ended up becoming the Flag Smashers. So maybe it's a good thing Danya Madani is dead. Otherwise, maybe like the Red Skull, she would have turned out to be one of those terrible icons Zemo mentioned earlier on in his plane. But maybe her death or her sickness, was a terrible thing. Maybe Carly wasn't ready to take the power. I don't know. Dovich mentions the power broker is not going to let him go, though. Carly's got a piece of information. She knows Nagel's dead. And says the power broker is going to come to them begging. Dovich is pleased. He thinks, great, one less fight. But Carly is focused on the task at hand, which is apparently the fight in front of them, stealing supplies. They got the rest of the serum, but is it 12 doses? 8 super soldiers, 1 dead on a tarmac in Germany, so 7 left, plus 12 doses left? I don't know. Speaking of John Walker and his sidekick Hoskins, maybe they're 2 serum holders. I don't know. They're at the prison from earlier in the episode. And there's a little bit of contrast here because they're asking about Zemo escaping, and they seem to want to pin the blame on Sam and Bucky without proof, or at least Walker does. The whole scene is just more proof that Walker's unworthy. Power corrupts him. Hoskins, he's like the angel on his shoulder. He's constantly trying to talk him down. Cap didn't really need that kind of pep talk.
Lamar, if we get the job done, do you really think they're going to sweat us on the how?
Zemo, Sam, and Bucky are on the plane again. Sam reaches out to Torres to find Danya Madani. He then gets a little whiny, if you ask me. He laments how Sharon got into trouble for them, and Isaiah got taken advantage of, and how Cap is gone. And he says you should have destroyed the shield. Bucky's not pleased with that sentiment, reminding him of the good of having someone like Steve carry the symbol. Somehow it went from Sam feeling guilty about Sharon to wanting him to destroy Captain America rather than see it in another's hands, but I don't know. Zemo once told Steve Rogers his eyes had a little green in them and that was a flaw, and he was delighted to see that Rogers had one. To me, this whiny behavior is Sam's. This constant unworthiness or this constant pessimism. But maybe that can change, I suppose. Torres gives them the heads up on Madani, saying she died in a camp in Latvia recently. Zemo has an idea on what to do next, and he's relishing the idea of confronting Carly, but why? Do they have a history?
Resnick, we're changing the course.
Carly and the Flag Smashers succeeded in their raid on the GRC compound. They tied up the people guarding the base. There are a lot of supplies sitting in the building. 6 months, Carly says. But we're not told how many camps this depot served, so Carly's not, thinking clearly, I guess. Or maybe we're supposed to understand this was the only site for supplies for her camp. I don't know. But she's only concerned with her people. She doesn't care about anybody else. Dovich and Carly about to leave. And he's confused. Why aren't you taking your car? She tells him, get a seatbelt on now. And then there's an explosion. Dovich seems disturbed. He says people were still in there. Carly seemed so sympathetic a short time ago. And now she's just a monster.
There were still people in there.
This is the only language these people understand.
Zemo, Bucky, and Sam are walking the streets of Riga, Latvia, the next day. Or at least we think the next day. Zemo mentions Sokovia and the memorial. I kind of hope he ends up with a scene with Wanda Maximoff, how much he talks about it. And that count that 2 shows, the first 2 on Disney Plus for Marvel, both centered on Sokovian characters. He mentions a Sokovian memorial. And we do see the shot of him in the trailers in front of a memorial of some kind. So maybe we see him visit there soon, or at least by the end of the next show, or the whole show. Bucky glances at the ground during his walk with them. And when they get to their destination in town, he tells Sam and Zemo he's going to take a little walk. He heads back to where he spotted something, and it looks like a tracking device of some kind, a little bead. It's small. Somehow he spotted it, though. Recognize what it was and what it means, because he goes down the street, finds another one. It leads him to an alley or street where he calls on the person dropping them to come out. It's one of the Black Panther's royal guards. She's actually the first one we ever met in a Marvel property. Not Okoye, played by Danai Gurira, but Io, played by Florence Kasumba. She's not pleased that Zemo's out of prison. And the White Wolf better have a good explanation. Boy, if looks could kill.
Didn't go Zemo.
She's there for Zemo. And three episodes in, one half of the show left. The addition of a Wakandan element is kind of interesting because T'Challa spared Zemo's life, even preventing him from committing suicide near the end of Civil War. In real life, Chadwick Boseman, of course, passed away. So maybe there's an in-universe explanation for that as well, or maybe we end up seeing him in some footage before he passed away. T'Challa said he was done letting vengeance consume him because of what happened to his father, but maybe there are some who will not forget what Zemo did, and maybe Io is there to get some kind of revenge. Maybe Zemo's escape will end up short-lived, because they know who he is, and even if he doesn't have land in Sokovia, because it's mostly rubble, they must know what he owns, and surely somebody knows about his plane. It's only a matter of time then before Walker catches up to them. Nagel dying seems a little odd to me. Maybe Zemo knew something we don't about Sharon knowing where to find him. Maybe he took the opportunity to try and end the search for superpower, but really, there's no more serum that can be replicated. This was Nagel, and he's dead, and now there's no way to create more super serum. It's just all over. There's not a secret stash somewhere. No one else is going to be able to replicate it. I mean, he didn't share any of his notes, any of his work. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad idea if you're, under duress. And you don't want somebody to do it cheaper, Maybe Sharon works directly for or is the power broker. I think it's more likely that she works for or with him, based on her discussion at the end of the shipping container battle with her bodyguard and driver. Selby was supposed to be a bottom rung, but she seemed a little too dim, and you wouldn't need to say kill them if you made that kind of demand, right? You'd have a hand signal, and you probably would have made it before anyone else knew what was happening. You wouldn't have said, kill them! And when Sam answers the phone like that, what's she supposed to think is going on? Like, if he's talking like that, just end the conversation, right? The line about Cheerios fits, though, because it's 8 p.m. in Madripoor. It'd be about 8 a.m. in Louisiana. So that actually fits. She says a line about Cheerios, and it would fit because it would be breakfast time in Louisiana. Interesting, early in the episode, the writers seem to drum up sympathy for Carly, what seems to be her caretaker during the blip, having TB, and then maybe the serum was supposed to have healed her or something. But that murder of the people and the explosion later, she is much more the villain after that. I actually liked the job that the person who played Dovich did with the character. He gave him like a little bit of humanity. There was a look in his eyes and the way he talked. He really kind of seemed disturbed by what was going on. And maybe he can help talk, or maybe he has a conversation with her like, where it's not supposed to be like this. You're supposed to be better than that or something. Zemo, on the other hand, I kind of liked him in the episode. He went from kind of a dirtbaggy kind of guy. I ended up kind of liking his character. Yes, he killed Nagel, but, we can understand his motivations. He's not changed. All that time in prison has not changed him. Another nice job of characterization by Marvel. There were actually people remember making an argument that Thanos was right to snap people out of existence between Infinity Wars and Endgame. People were making that argument, saying, yeah, it's a good idea to drop half the universe. So it's not crazy to understand how a man who lost his family because superheroes were alive can be working with some of them to stop more of them. And Sharon points out in one of her lines, she says, they're all a bunch of hypocrites. You must know that. Strange, though, how Sharon has to do what she could to survive. Surely, though, did she have to do it in Madripoor? It was a choice to seek out life there, right? Unless that's her task. Now, maybe Ronan, Hawkeye, was to blame for some of the lawlessness there in Madripoor. Remember, he was hunting villains in the 5 years post-Snap. And Black Widow had to go and talk him down. Natasha had to talk him down. Did he create a power vacuum that led to the creation of the Power Broker? Maybe. Is the Power Broker someone we already know? Is John Walker a client or part of the company? Does he represent America or the GRC's interest? Is he on loan? Is he a favor? You know, is John Walker a favor for somebody? I still feel like we get a post-credit scene at the end of the series or episode 6 where Walker's been ousted his cap. But he's, you know, we promise we'll make this up to you. And then he's given one of the doses of serum. Because 12 of them are in the wind right now, right? One more note now. If you're thinking to yourself that my podcasts of late have seemed to skip a lot of stuff, unlike the ones we do for The Mandalorian and The WandaVision, you're kind of right. You know, this show has a lot less mystery to it. It's very entertaining to watch, though. I maintain this would have been better served, since it's only 6 episodes, having all of them available at once. Now, it would have made theorizing impossible, but kind of like a movie, it might have been better to just talk about what was important to the story and not all these things that may or may not ever come to fruition, because it's only 6 episodes and it seems like they're rushing through it. So, you know, it just doesn't seem like they're going to put a red herring in there. It doesn't feel like they have time to do red herrings. WandaVision speculation got real crazy. But it was fun because it felt like there was a mystery that was unraveling for us. But here we already see in the trailers that Sam and Bucky have Cap's shield. So we want to know how and when Sam actually takes up the mantle, because, you know, well, Marvel said that he was going to do that. Loki's trailer is out. I mean, Black Widow's got a new trailer. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, or Marvel Studios Universe, Multiverse, whatever you want to call it, is rolling on. Well, what do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or facebook.com/thewayphase4. Episode 3, like the others, directed by Kerry Skoglund. Derek Kolstad wrote this episode. Remember, I made a note about John Wick and the bounty placed on their heads after Selby got sniped? Well, it makes sense because Kolstad wrote all of the John Wick movies. Episode 4 is going to air April 9th, and the final episode is set to air April 23rd. This has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 3 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.